MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. Dr. Joseph Akins was just promoted to Associate Professor of Recording Industry here at MTSU, but aside from his academic career, Dr. Akins exercises his musical talent. He is a keyboardist, and he has done so in three different solo albums to date. He has done so with Masterpiece, spelled P-E-A-C-E, Keys to the Heart, and his latest release, which is called Spirit Touch. www.josephakins.com is the website where you can find out more about him and his music, and he's here with us today to talk with us about it and how he balances the creative life and the academic life. Welcome, Dr. Akins. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Likewise, Gina.
It's Jenna.
Jenna. Likewise, Jenna.
Thank you. I first learned about you in a Cookeville newspaper article where you had gone to speak at a Unity Church and to perform some music there. And it seemed like you're another one of these faculty members who has just quietly gone along and done his thing and hasn't gotten all that much publicity. But the things that you do are really astonishing. You started out learning saxophone as a child. How did you make the transition from saxophone to keyboard?
Well, that's an interesting question. I started playing saxophone and piano at the same time as a child. And then as I got older, I played both for many years, and then as I got older and began college, it felt like it was too much to try to become proficient at both instruments. So while I was majoring in jazz at University of Tennessee in Knoxville, I decided to put more focus on the piano.
And you wanted to be a musician full-time, at least initially in the early stages of your career?
When I was a child, from age 7 to 12, I wanted to be a baseball star. Even though I was involved with music, everyone in my family was involved with music. I was raised in a musical family. But when I became 12, my father recruited me in his band. I began playing in his band, performing every weekend. And it was at that time I knew that music would be a big part of my life.
Now, did you want to make a career totally out of your music, or did you always have it in the back of your mind that, well, I can always teach if this doesn't pan out, because anything having to do with show business or the entertainment world, usually you grew up in a musical family, but it does make some parents cringe and worry about their kids when they want to go into any aspect of entertainment, because they fear that it won't be a steady enough job for them.
Well, I had a different experience. My parents pushed me to go into music and supported me very much to go into music and did not encourage me to teach. They encouraged me to write and perform. And as a teenager, that was my dream, was to be a musician, and I was, and wanted to continue with that and make a living at it. When I had no thoughts of being a teacher. And after I graduated from high school, I traveled on the road with a rock and roll band for a couple of years. And it was a good band. We traveled well, and I started discovering then how tough it was to be in the music industry as a musician and full time. And I decided to go back to college to begin studying in higher education. And really the main reason I did that is because I wanted to become a better musician. I have been playing pop, rock, country music as a teenager, and I felt like I'd gone as far as I could, and I wanted to learn more about music. And I knew going to a music department, I'd be able to study classical music, I'd be able to learn more about jazz, and I did that. Well, while there, I discovered that I liked teaching. I discovered that higher education was cool. I enjoyed it. And that's when I decided that I knew that teaching would then be a part of my life.
Who were your favorite musical artists as a kid?
As a kid?
Yeah, as a kid.
Oh, wow. Well, gosh, when I was, you know, a young child, I just listened to what was on the radio. So whatever was top 40, you know, singles, I collected singles, and I had all kinds of favorite songs. Once I became a teenager, I started collecting record albums and started liking the rock groups that were popular. And, of course, my first album was by the band Kiss. Mm-hmm. And because of their theatrical image, and I was drawn to that at 13 years old, and I collected all their albums and listened to them. And then I started getting into more progressive rock and roll, like the band Rush, and groups like Van Halen and Journey, and groups like that, you know, the late 70s and the early 80s. And so that was my teenage life. But once I got up to about 19, I started listening to jazz artists like Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock, and eventually Charlie Parker and John Coltrane. And so I became a jazz fan in my 20s.
Now, it's very interesting that you would mention all of those artists, because on your CDs, the kind of music you play is very lilting and melodic. Mm. And is not associated in any way with heavy metal or not, or, you know, bebop or any other kinds of genres. What appealed to you about the kind of music that you're playing now?
Well, I think as I got older, especially into my, it was about age 30, I went through a change in life. I went through life-changing time when my father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and I spent 2 years with him as he digressed. And it was amazing to see how, even though he lost his memory and could hardly speak, he could still sing lyrics and could still enjoy music. And I was so moved by that time, by that experience, that I started becoming interested in music that is therapeutic and that can help people. So my purpose for my music writing and performing took a change at that time. So I think with that experience, and then just the becoming a mature adult and becoming more interested in quiet times, mm-hmm. then my music became more quiet and peaceful and with all that. So I think it's just with the life experiences.
Did going through this in your life make you a more spiritual person, you think, or a more religious person? I hesitate to use those as synonyms, but...
Well, yeah, that at that time, I did begin putting more attention on a spiritual life, and I did become a regular church member. I started playing in churches, and that's a very different experience than playing in jazz clubs and rock and roll bars and things like that when I was younger. So that had a major influence on my music too.
You talked about the healing power of music. How do you think music helps to heal us, either our bodies or our souls? How I mean, not in terms of a scientific or biological explanation of how it works, but why do you think it is as powerful as it is, as that kind of a force, that kind of a life force?
Well, from my own experience, like any type of art, it allows you to come in touch with your feelings and allows you to express what you're feeling inside. If you're feeling grief, pain, anger, any type of negative emotions that's not good for you, that you're holding in, by expressing yourself through music, art, any type of creative endeavor, it allows you to move those emotions and express them and move on. So I think that's one powerful way, and even if you're a listener as well.
How did your father, you say he could still sing lyrics, did he have to have the lyric sheet right in front of him, or could he, were there certain lyrics that he could remember even as he was sliding into Alzheimer's?
Yeah. He didn't need the sheet in front of him. It would be from memory.
Did that impress you or make you curious as to how the brain works, that certain things would slip out of his memory as the disease took its toll, and yet the lyrics from certain songs would stay put in the brain?
Yeah. That's. I think it's has to do with the lyrics, the words combined with the melody. For some reason, when you combine the melody with the words, then that was an ability he still had. That was something he had not lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What instrument did he play, or instruments?
He played guitar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And your mother? Was she musical too?
Yeah, my mother was a vocalist. She's a singer. I have two older siblings. My brother played many different instruments, and then my sister as well. And when I was a child growing up, we had a band, a family band. Mm-hmm. So my brother would play drums or bass. My sister would play an instrument. My dad played an instrument. So everybody had an instrument.
Let's take a listen to one of the cuts on the latest album right now. This is the title track from the CD Spirit Touch, a few seconds of it anyway. Few moments of Spirit Touch by Dr. Joseph Akins. Would you be averse to having it characterized in terms of a genre? A lot of musicians just hate to stick a label on anything. Do you fall into that as well? You don't like people characterizing your music as this, that, or the other thing. It's just you.
Yes.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Have people who talk to you about your music, have they drawn any comparisons between you and any other musicians that they've heard?
Yes, there's an artist named David Lawns who I've become friends with. He had a hit back in the 80s called Cristofori's Dream, an instrumental piano piece. And I've had a few people compare me to David, and there's good reason. I've listened to his music quite a bit. So he's been a major influence on me in the past decade. Some people have mentioned Jim Brickman, who's more popular, and George Winston will be another one who's quite popular.
Have you been able to pick up any radio airplay?
I've been really happy with airplay over the last few months. There's, for example, Comcast Cable has a music choice channel, and there's one called Soundscapes, and it's been playing on there quite a bit. And about 50-something other stations across the country and in other countries have been playing it.
How has the digital revolution affected the ability of artists like you to get your music heard by larger numbers of people?
Oh, it's amazing. I put out an album back in 97, Keys to the Heart, and at that time the internet was just taking off, and I created a website and put music samples up, and there just wasn't much activity going on. Amazon was just starting to help promote an independent artist, and I was there, but there just wasn't much going on. I was spending a majority of my time trying to promote my music through performances and traditional brick-and-mortar stores. And that's really difficult to do on a national level, by yourself especially. So unless you have a record label, someone backing you, that's very difficult to do. So you're called a regional artist. Well, the internet over the last decade has really changed that. Now, with the technologies out there, with iTunes and so forth, it's amazing how there are so many artists that are getting recognition all over the world without any record label, just by themselves. I have friends who are making a living full-time by doing this. And they still may get out and perform, or they may go through traditional bookstores, music stores, but by large, they're getting most of their fans through the internet.
You've performed with some local Nashville musicians of note, haven't you?
Oh, yes.
But you've performed jazz as well as performing your own tunes?
Yeah. I still perform jazz gigs, we call them. There's an artist, there's a professor here, Jamie Simmons, who I've performed with a few times, and I have many friends in Chattanooga and different parts of Tennessee, Knoxville, that I perform with on occasion, and it's usually a jazz type of engagement.
Where would you perform live? Are there clubs? Or you performed at the church. Do you have an opportunity in between doing your teaching work to perform in various arenas or clubs in the area?
Well, in the past couple of years, I've been performing more. I've been performing quite a bit in recital halls, small concert halls, because this is a very niche audience. So we typically have an audience sometimes as small as 20 people, maybe sometimes 200. And it's typical to find me playing in a performance hall, recital hall that's small. You might find it at a piano store or a library, a performing arts center that you find in towns like Atlanta, Knoxville, Nashville. I just returned from St. Louis, where I played at a performing arts center there. And before that, I was in South Dakota and Wyoming, where I played at a performing arts center in Rapid City. later this month, I'll be going to Denver, and I'll be playing at a music venue there that's also a restaurant. I'll also be playing at a piano store. So, and then I play, like you mentioned, I play at quite a few churches.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you just book individual dates instead of a tour.
Yeah, a tour. The tours are usually very short. Like I may go out and play three or four different places that are close together and then come back home. Because this is my part-time, mm-hmm. what I'm doing to, you know, adjunct to what I do here at MTSU. But what I'd like to mention that mostly what I'm doing now are concerts where, well, there's a difference between doing a performance where people sit and listen. That's different than playing at a club or a bar where people are there to socialize, maybe dance,
right.
and talk and so forth. And that's usually what you'll find in most jazz situations or pop music like country rock, where you go to a club and people come there to socialize and dance, and you're providing background or giving support for that. And I did that for many years, but mostly what I'm doing now are situations where people are coming to relax and enjoy the music.
Let's listen to a little bit of another track now. This is from Spirit Touch, and it's called Cascades. Falling water in it, that one has a little bit more of an edge to it, mm-hmm. and it with also with the other instruments in there, a little bit more up tempo.
Mm-hmm.
How did you become a professor of recording industry instead of a professor of music?
Wow. When I was studying, I've in addition to playing the piano and composing and performing for piano, I've also been interested in keyboards and synthesizers. Mm-hmm. I studied electronic music composition when I was at UT in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a strong interest for the whole process of recording, keeping, composing in electronic, you know, with synthesizers and so forth, drum machines, and I've always had an interest in that. So what you were hearing in that last track, there was some keyboards in the background. So with that, as well as playing the piano, I found a job opening here at MTSU. They were looking for somebody to teach that, to teach what's called MIDI. synthesizers and so forth. And so back 10 years ago, they I applied for the job, and it's been really great ever since. It's such an interesting program because it's not just one. It's not just musicians. Mm-hmm. We have lawyers, we have marketers, we have audio engineers, we have. It's such an eclectic program, the recording program here.
And you teach specifically what?
Well, I teach, like I was saying, MIDI and synthesis. And then I teach a basic musicianship course that helps our audio production students become more literate in music.
Do you have recording equipment in your home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. I have, you know, most musicians do now. You've got a computer and perhaps a keyboard and a couple of microphones, and you can do a decent sounding recording in your home today at not much expense.
How do you feel about the use of recording techniques, which has been done at the high professional level, the very lucrative level, to make some recording artists seem more musically literate than they are, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's... I would say the most talked about is pitch correction for singers. There's a program called AutoTune and another one called Melodyne that are used to correct someone's pitch after they've sung. After a recording of someone singing, you could take their flat notes, sharp notes, and you can fix them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no problem with that. In fact, I've used it myself, and I've learned to enjoy it. It's, I think it's helped me appreciate older recordings more. Mm-hmm. When I hear something from the 70s and it sounds good, and I know it wasn't fixed,
yeah,
like what you might hear today,
or the days when, say, Frank Sinatra would record with just to name one artist, with Nelson Riddle and an entire orchestra right there.
Yeah.
Instead of laying the tracks down later,
mm-hmm.
which is what is done today. It's all done at that moment. What I was really getting at, though, is why recording industry as opposed to actually teaching something like composition or something that would, you know, go under the school of music kind of realm? Or was it that this just happened to be what you knew and it would seem like a good fit?
Well, I think that my interest has always been more in commercial music. I feel like I've always been more of a person that's interested about the cutting edge. I mentioned before I have a strong interest in technology, and that's really what this program is here at MTSU. We're about... getting out there, promoting your music, about making a living, about whether it be songwriting or recording or something in the business. And that just really works for me. I feel like it's been a good fit.
Mm-hmm. What kind of students have you run across in your classrooms? What do most of them want to do? Do they want to produce records? Do they want to be musicians? Do they want to be record company executives, A&R people? What do they want to do?
Well, most of the classes I teach are for the audio production students.
Mm-hmm.
We also have music business students as well, but I don't see very many of those. But I would say many students come in to our program with stars in their eyes. They want to be a producer, perhaps. They want to be an artist, and they feel that our program will help them achieve those goals. Some other students, I would say, want to be an audio engineer. A lot of them now are interested in live sound, so it's not just a studio. Some of them go on to be in the musical merchandising industry, where they consult and help sell and set up studios. We have folks that are real techie, and they learn to build and redesign and repair recording equipment. And then many of them just, they continue to be musicians. They have their band. They write songs. We've had some successful students that become songwriters in Nashville.
Mm-hmm. If you would like to take a class from Dr. Joseph Akins and find out more about what he teaches, your email address, I take it, is jakins, J-A-K-I-N-S,
that's it,
at mtsu.edu. Mm-hmm. Just shoot him an email, and I'm sure he'll be happy to tell you about the recording industry program here at the campus. And if you want to find out more about his music, go to www.josephakins.com, and you'll find out how to purchase his CDs, get sheet music, find out where he's playing, and maybe even listen to a track or two.
I'll also send you a free download. I'd be happy to send you a free MP3.
That's great. Thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jenna.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can download the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com. And we're available on iTunes.